Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Well, hey folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. There's a lot of people homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter. Someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that. So I came up with this small structure design, which I call the multi-shack, because it has actually multi-uses to it. and it can be built very affordably. You can build this entire shack for under $200, and it is built on wheels. It can be put on either a 4x6 trailer, or you can build it on casters. Casters are a lot less expensive, but it still allows you to move this unit around. So you could store, you know, a bunch of these on a church parking lot, and then just when you need them, you can move them out to wherever you want the person to be using them. Casters are 4-inch casters. Each caster will hold up to 240 pounds, so they'll more than handle the weight for this structure here. Now, this structure is 6'5" from the peak to the bottom, 6'5", so and even a tall person can stand upright inside this structure. The door is 1'6" wide and about 5'3" to the peak up there in the door. And the structure is 4 foot wide approximately and about 6 foot long. About 6 foot long by 4 foot wide, 6'5" to the peak. And this is constructed very inexpensively from 2x4 framing, which I'll show you, and uses, I would use 7/16 OSB or plywood. Either one would work for the siding on this. Now, a couple of the features here. I show this with dorm windows. The dorm windows are actually optional. You don't have to put dorm windows. You can just go with a flat roof surface if you want here. I show this with wood shingles, or you could use just plain old tar paper and roofing shingles. Any type of roofing shingles would work on this. Show it with a little flower box there just for effect. And on the backs and the front, I show this with these round windows, like boat-style windows, or you could put square windows. Either one works. I just like the effect of the round windows, the look of those in there. This does have an access panel on the back. Down here is an access panel. We'll just open this up so I can show you. Open up, take this one off. There we go. Now you can see inside the access panel. Underneath the seat and bed is storage, lots of storage underneath here for a propane tank, one of those Port-a-Loo porta-potties, an ice chest over there you can see. Okay, so there's good storage. This is about 18 inches high inside here and about 4 feet wide inside. So the structure, I'll show this with the door open. Let me just hide this door here. With the door open, you can see I've got this set up. Right now I've got it set up for seating. During the day, this would be used for seating purposes, okay? And I'm going to pull the side roof off here so I can show you inside. But this has a very nice space for a person that maybe is going to school or working, or just the table can be used for eating or whatever. So you've got approximately 6 feet of space on the inside here by 4 feet wide. And this table is actually part of the bed platform, which I'll show you. You just pull the 2x4 out, put it in one of these slots. It's in this 2x4 here. There's another one on the other side. You just drop the 2x4 into the slot, and then you take your bed panel and put it up on top of that, and then that becomes a table. Here you've got 2 foot by 4 foot cushions. There's three of these cushions that become your bed, or you can use a roll-up mattress pad underneath this that becomes your bed. But during the daytime, it becomes seating. It becomes a little mini couch in here, 4 foot wide, and now you've got a space for a student to do their studies, their work, or for having your meal, or if you're working on a hobby or a craft or something like that, you've got this nice little space. When you get out the door, you just lift the table up, put it back, put the 2x4 back in the bottom slots, put the table down, and you know, then you turn it into a bed. And I'm going to show you what it looks like as a bed too. So, good headroom in this. I really like that it's got a very good space. This is an average person, 5'8" tall. You can see you've got lots of headroom here. You've got these nice dormer windows, which would give you lots of light, and also gives you a little bit more headroom up in this area right in here. A 6 foot person could stand up in the middle of this quite comfortably. Two people could actually sit side by side on this couch, or you can put in another, you could pull your ice chest cooler out, or someone could put a foldable chair on the other side here. So you could actually have two people sitting side by side or crossways next to each other here. So lots of space in this little place. So let me show you what the framing looks like on this first. And I'll just have to zoom in on this. Now, this is all done with 2x4 construction to keep it inexpensive and easy to build. And then I would sheathe it with either 7/16 inch OSB or plywood. Either one would work. Now, it's got a floor frame, as you can see, made of 2x4s down here. Simple 2x4 frame, floor frame construction, and then your casters attached to the corners, not exactly in the corners, but they attach to the floor framing, and the casters have locks on them, so once you move this in place, you can just click on the locks and lock it in place so it won't be rolled around while the person is inside it. Now, this is the bed platform, and it has, this back platform is 2'6" wide, and it is permanently connected. These are 1'9" wide platforms that can be raised up. And as you can see, these 2x4s right here, you put the 2x4 up in these other slots, and then you put these panels up on top, and they become either a table or a workspace. This one can go up here. This one can go on the end. It can go over the middle. So I gave you lots of options for the ways that you can organize this into workspace or living space as you need to use it. Very simple construction. Takes about 20 2x4s to build this. That's about it. And you're looking at about under $200 for all the material costs. And you could build one of these in a day. Seriously, you could build the complete unit in about a day. And now I'm going to show you on the inside how this can be used as a bed and also as a small business. So I'm just going to click off this. Okay, now I show this with the bed down, the door open so you can kind of get a peek inside here. Now, this is an uninsulated structure. You really don't need insulation in a small structure like this because the human body puts off about as much heat as a 90-watt light bulb. So in a small structure like this, your own body heat will actually heat it up. And for sleeping, you can either do these pads like this as mattress pads, or you can just get a sleeping bag pad or even an air cushion pad to go underneath it. A sleeping bag pad would work fine because you can roll it up and use it as your seating. And a good heavy-duty sleeping bag would be all you would need in order to sleep very comfortably in here. As long as you don't have the wind blowing on you or the rain drenching you or snow piling up on you, you'll sleep very comfortably in a small structure like this. Your own body heat will heat it up. You could add a heater to these, but it really isn't necessary in these small structures. So I'm going to pull off the side roof, and I'm going to show you how much space this has inside it for a bed. It actually has a very nice bed that will sleep either one or two people. Pull this off here. Just hide this. Now, this has a 4 foot wide by 6 foot long bed. So even an average person can sleep in here. Even a tall person, fairly tall person, could sleep in here comfortably without being cramped. And it's 4 foot wide, so that's a very wide bed that will actually sleep two people. Two people could sleep in this space, all right? And it's 6 foot wide, and it's 4 foot wide and 6 foot long. This person I show in here is about 5'8" tall, which is average height for most people. And here you can see the slots I was talking about. These platforms, which I'll show you, I'll take the bed off now. These two platforms are removable with 2x4s underneath them. You just take the 2x4, you put it in the slots that go across here, and then put these platforms up on top to make your table. And you can actually do a table on either end or one in the middle for a desk and table. Now, the ones on the ends I'll show you are used if you want to run a small business out of here, or if you want to organize this in a different way so that if you're cooking, you could put one of these tables on this end or on this end, and you could set up your cooking supplies and you can take care of yourself. You can cook a meal inside this little place right here. So 4 foot wide, 6 foot long bed, and then very adaptable with these platforms of 2x4s. You can just put them up and you can reorganize this any way you want during the daytime for whatever function that you're going to be using. Again, it has storage space underneath the bed and seating. You've got that nice access panel for you got storage underneath there. And I really like the space in here. This would be enough adequate space if in an emergency, let's say that a city has a disaster, a fire like they just had in Canada wipes out all these homes, or you have a tornado tear through a place, or you have flooding or something like that, which we've all seen in the news, happens all the time, and suddenly churches are overrun with people that don't have housing. You know, if you had a bunch of these sitting around that would sleep at least two people, you could pull these out in a small area, you could set these up, and people would at least have shelter for, you know, survival until they can get into houses or shelter, bigger shelters or something like that. So that's another use for this type of structure here. So now I'm going to put the bed back on just to show you. And again, you can see this has really nice dormer windows. So you got really good light in this. And it's got an excellent sleeping space. It would be better for one person, but it would be adequate for two people. Okay? And, you know, if you got little teeny kids with you, you could put, you know, one adult and a couple of kids in there, too. You know, there's enough space in there to sleep comfortably, and you've got lots and lots of headroom. You're not going to bump your head or anything while you're sleeping. Doorway, 1 foot 6 inches wide, 5 foot 3 inches to the top up here. So lots and lots of good space in this. Now I'm going to show you how this can also be modified to be used as a small business. Okay, one thing I know about people that are homeless is they're also very creative, and you know, a lot of them actually run little businesses in order to support themselves. A lot of them do recycling. They recycle cans and bottles and other stuff like that, or they pick up small appliances and stuff that they may find on the streets, or books or pictures or whatever, and they resell them, and that's how they support themselves. A lot of them are also very crafty people. They may make jewelry, or they may make wood crafts or something like that, or they may be artists. And so they have a way to support themselves, and so I think we ought to encourage that, because that helps them to develop sustainability. Not everybody is equipped to work in the regular workforce. Some people just aren't, but they're very industrious and can support themselves with a small business. And so I thought, well, this shack could also be used for setting up a small business. So what I did is I made this so that the window here can be hinged up, and I'll show this. The window on one of the dormers, or both, can be hinged up out of the way. And then you've got room here to put a sales counter or little platform here where this person is 5 foot 8 inches tall. A person can stand in this window and they can operate a small business. They can talk to customers, they can take money, whatever, working right out of this small shack. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to be for homeless people. If you wanted to run a hot dog or hamburger stand, or sell your crafts or your books, or, you know, whatever you want to do with this, maybe it's a ticket stand, I don't know. This little shack could be very useful for a lot of different purposes. That's why I call it a multi-shack, is because it can be used for many different purposes. But this would be great for a homeless person that has a craft that they make, or recycle products or whatever. They want to sell them. They just hinge up the window, and they set themselves up a little business here to take care of customers. Now, this also shows inside how those tables can be reorganized. Here you can see I've lifted up the bed platform to put a table on this end, another table on this end, and you can use this for cooking in here. You can see I've got a little two-burner propane stove that you can set up on one of the tables up there, so you can do your cooking. You can work on your crafts. This table just lifts off, a 2x4 lifts off if you need to get access to the door. Lots of good headroom, okay? Workspace in there. This can be modified many different ways for many different people of however you want to use it. So a very functional space in there. All right, so that is the multi-shack, all right? And let me just unhide this so you can get a better view of it. Again, can be built very inexpensively, around under $200 on casters, more expensive if you put it on a trailer. And I'm going to provide these plans for free, because this is a project that I designed specifically for churches and nonprofit organizations to build shelters. And at present in the U.S., we have about 1.6 million homeless people that just need a simple shelter to live in. Or we have, that's about one out of 200 people. And that's just in the U.S. There's a lot of people in other countries that are in even worse shape. And I really think a project like this would be great for helping the homeless people to have shelter while maintaining their independence and their pride. But it could also be used as disaster relief shelters. We could easily have a major disaster in a city where we have thousands and thousands of people that suddenly are homeless and we need to provide quick shelter. These would also work for that. It would be big enough space for two people to sleep and, to take care of their basic needs. And that's what this structure is about. So I hope you like this design. It's called the Multi-Shack. You can get the plans for free on my website, simplesolarhomesteading.com. Up at the top, look at Multi-Shack. Now, there is a button there if you would like to donate. Your donations are used by me to design structures like this and build small houses. I work with a lot of homeless people that don't want to be in the system, that want to build their own off-grid cabins and houses and places like that. I help them with designs and building those projects. So any donation, if you can donate, is very appreciated and will help with those projects. All right, folks, I hope you like this project called the Multi-Shack, and have a great day.
Welcome to Camp Hugay. Hugay.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had, and he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far, $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas, and I liked this beachy boho style with lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I liked that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white, and then our kitchen cabinet turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the backside came from our house except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen, where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator, just the inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for a dollar at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it says Lauren's Little Camper. I got this sign from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that, so it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it, but she's making the best of it.
Lauren hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home.
And she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account. He said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing.
If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Tools That Print Money, Creating Value. And Lauren Nelson, who's, Lauren's about 12, 13 years old right now. All right. And there are people, quite a few people actually that are older than her that are doing the same thing. I know of a lady that I met right here about a couple of years ago. She's got a regular full-time job, but she lives in a camper that she purchased for $500. There's a lot of people out here that are living in $500 houses or $1,000 houses. But in any event, let's talk about some of the skills that people have that are picking up. And tomorrow, we got a guest that'll be in studio. Don't miss tomorrow's podcast. Now we've done over 2,000 podcasts knocking at the door of 10 years. On December the 24th, but we've done over 2,000 podcasts, probably over 2,400. Now, this podcast tomorrow is going to automatically be within our top 10. And let me just throw out on the top of my head, within the top 10, in no particular order, any of the interviews that we did with Patrick Collins. Now, Patrick Collins is the son of Marva Collins. For those of you who knew who Marva Collins was, who was a famed educator here in the United States, and I've interviewed Patrick about 5, 6, 7 times. But he always gives a dynamic interview, particularly when it comes to education. So I'm lumping all his podcasts into one category because we interview him about once a year or so. But he's in the top 10. He might be in the top three, but his interviews, I'm lumping them all in as one. Let's see. Another one would be, and this is in what I consider the top 10, you know, the podcast we've done over 10 years. We only had her on one time. We had her for about maybe 90 minutes or so. And that's the lady who started Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. We had her on. She is one of the, matter of fact, let me, woman who started MAD. I usually know her name right off the top of my head. Woman who started MAD, which is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Let's see. Candy Lightner. Candy Lightner. And she gave right here, and we got it in the archives. We got everybody I'm talking about in the archives. She, after her daughter was killed in an auto accident by a drunk driver and got a very light sentence, she had to do something, but she didn't know how to go about doing it. And she didn't have any money. She had other kids to raise. And she started Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And for the first 2 years, it was just her and her dad that, you know, put any money into it. She didn't know the difference between a Democrat or Republican or nothing like that. Long story short, she eventually made it all the way up to the White House and then both sides of, you know, Congress and the Senate, and got legislation passed to get the drunk driving laws that we have on the books today. Candy Lightner, the founder of Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and they probably take in $21 million to $25 million or more a year in donations. That she gave us an interview right on this station. So she's in our top 10. Her, Patrick Collins, the next one we gave back in January of this year, three young ladies, African American ladies out of Metro Atlanta. Three of them ran across 96 acres of land and they went back and talked to 10 friends each, came up with 19 families, bought the 96 acres of land. And when they were here with us in January of this year and gave us a 90-minute interview, and that's the Freedom Georgia Initiative. They're starting their own town called Freedom Georgia. They were up to 502 acres. So we got them, Patrick Collins, Candy Lightner, and we've had a lot of, you know, I'm going to throw Judge Joe Brown in there, just on GP, thanks to Robin Maven, and he's been on here 4 or 5 times. He was on here about 3 weeks ago, Judge Joe Brown of TV fame and internet fame now. And I think he's running for mayor of Memphis, Tennessee right now. So I'm putting him in as number 4 out of the top 10. And you know, one day I got to do a Mount Rushmore. But this one tomorrow, I'm not going to tell you her name. But I'll tell you a little bit about her story. Here's an African-American woman, single parent. Her son, who was at the time, I don't know, 2, 3 years old, stood on a table and, you know, as 2 and 3 year olds do, as we all did when we were that age, you know, broke a table. And this was during the pandemic. So the stores were closed. I'm not even going to tell you the town that she lives in. She can tell you all that tomorrow. And So she was figuring out, man, how can I replace this or what? So she went on YouTube, as she calls it, as we all probably call it, YouTube University, and learned. She's a self-taught carpenter. And in the world of carpentry, at least here in the United States, 96 to 97% of all carpenters are men. She's a self-taught carpenter, and she's a Black American woman. So tomorrow, like I said, I'm not going to give out her name. We'll give that out tomorrow. We'll let her blow her own horn tomorrow. She'll be in. Have your pen, paper, whatever recording device that you're going to take notes, have that ready for tomorrow. And we're going to, we might do one audio on Faith Street or something like that. That's at the beginning. But you definitely want to be on time to hear this interview tomorrow. I'm putting her in the top 10 before she even gives the interview. Okay. She's got one hell of a story. Now she's got employees. But this is a person that just went on YouTube and taught herself carpentry by watching videos on YouTube, and now, and then she started to pay bills with it. And then she bought a building with it so she can get, you know, handle the jobs that she was getting, and now she's got employees. So that person, like I said, before we even officially do the interview with her tomorrow, she's in my top 10. And if I had to put together a Mount Rushmore of It's My House guest or DIY House and TV guest on this podcast, I had to put Joe Brown to the side and put this woman in tomorrow. She's a bad mama jamma. So tune in tomorrow for that. Be on time. Be ready to take notes. And you'll be able to talk to her directly.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, Don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, my board is buffering. It's buffering, so we're trying to get that straight here by refreshing the...
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college. And I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so I know there's a lot of organizations out there that are helping the homeless, churches, nonprofits, and things like that.
Hi, folks.
Okay. Yeah, the system was buffering, so I couldn't get in, but I was managed to get my mic open. All right. Anyway, today's podcast is titled Tools That Print Money, Creating Value. Now, tomorrow, as I mentioned, I'm not going to mention her name, but we have a very special guest coming on tomorrow. I'll put her in the top 10. And like I said, we've done over 2,400 podcasts in the last almost, is we're knocking at the door. December 24th will be 10 years exactly. So we've done over 2,400 podcasts. I'm putting her, before she even officially gives us an interview tomorrow, in my top 10, what I consider the top 10 of over 2,000 podcasts. God, and I don't know how many interviews, but over 2,000 podcasts. I'm putting her in the top 10. And if I had to pick my Mount Rushmore, of interviews, or Mount Rushmore's of podcasts and interviews that we've done in the last 10 years or so. I would put her in my Mount Rushmore. And we've had Judge Joe Brown on here. If I had to, we've had some good ones. If I had to remove him out of the top four to make it Mount Rushmore, because Mount Rushmore is four people, four slots, I would have to remove Judge Joe Brown and put this lady that we're going to be interviewing tomorrow. Don't miss tomorrow's interview. Now, let me prepare the way for you for a little bit tomorrow so you can get something really personal out of this. You can apply this right here in this country, in the United States, as well as anywhere around the world. And today's podcast is titled Tools That Print Money and Creating Value. Now, this lady that we're going to be speaking to tomorrow, all right, I'm not going to tell you her name, where she lives at, nothing. You're going to have to get that tomorrow when we interview her. As I stated at the earlier part of this podcast, that when her son, you know, as we all do when we're young, we break something, furniture, whatever. He broke a table, so she wanted to get replaced. This was during the pandemic. She had bills to pay. She had a child to support. She had to support herself. And she went on YouTube and started watching videos on carpentry. Now, she became a woodworker. And one of the things that I have been, the last year or so, I've been studying manufacturers. And manufacturers make things. And, I mean, from individuals as well as companies and countries. If you want to see a person, if you're struggling financially in some aspect of the life, now this might not be a silver bullet, but the common denominator that I've seen where how did China go from a third world country to the leading producer in growing economy on the globe? And how did Germany bounce back? I mean, parts of Germany got decimated, at the end of the war at the demise of Adolf Hitler. How did they jump back and become, I mean, Germany's got the largest economy in Europe. Has been that way for several years now. So how did they go from minus zero to the number one economy in Europe? How did China go from a third world country to where they are right now? I mean, China manufactures, there's nobody close to them. They manufacture more items than anything in any other country on the planet. How did they do it? How did Germany do it? All right. How did Henry Ford, who only had a fifth or sixth grade education, go from that, he was a bicycle repair guy, to dying a billionaire? And he still got blood relatives that run Ford Motor Company. And there's a bunch of people on YouTube that make outrageous sums of money on a monthly basis. How did they do it? Well, this might not be a silver bullet, but the common denominator that I've run across is as these people discover tools that allow them to legally print money. We're going to have one on here tomorrow. And the tools that she uses to make money are tools that carpenters have, because she's a carpenter. She's a self-taught carpenter via YouTube videos. So I guess her first factory was in her home. So you have backyard factories bedroom factories, kitchen table factories, garage factories, factories set up upon acres. I ran across one guy over the weekend. He has a shed in his backyard, which is a factory. The common denominator with these people is, and Delmar can really break it down better than I could, but they take raw materials and they add value to them or create value. For the things that people, you know, I had an uncle that I didn't meet him. He was one of my cousin's grandfathers. But in the family, everybody called him Uncle Hosey, which I figured, you know, because they, you know, my people were the country folk. So I figured his birth certificate name was probably really Jose. But like I said, my folk are country folk, so everybody calls him Uncle. To this day, he's still spoken of to this day. But Uncle Hosey, with a sixth grade academic education, he had tools, manual tools. He didn't have power tools. He had manual tools that allowed him to print money. Now, this is how he did it. In our family, what he did when somebody got married or wanted a house, they would go to Uncle Hosey. And Uncle Hosey, now this is before Home Depot. We're talking about decades before Home Depot, Lowe's, Lumber 84, Menards, Ace Hardware. They didn't have any of that when he was operating on this planet. But Uncle Hosey, with that sixth grade education, he knew how to go into the woods and identify the right trees to cut down, and he would make his own lumber. Now, the manual tools, because we have power tools today, you know, that run off electricity, but he used manual tools to essentially create housing and create money, because I'm sure he built some houses for some people and he charged for, you know, for that whole skill. So he knew how to identify. In other words, he used his tools. He knew what tools to chop down the trees and build. He couldn't have gone to there was no hardware store. There was no government program, none of it. So tomorrow, when we listen to this self-taught carpenter speak, just keep in mind, and like I said, you'll be able to call in and ask her questions directly. Okay. What tools? Because she started, I mean, she would watch YouTube videos, build something, put it up online, and sell it. That's how she was able to sustain herself. Now, I don't know if she had any other jobs, because I've only spoken to her once so far. But anyway, that's our guest tomorrow. So, Pete, don't ask me who she is. I'm not giving out no names. Nothing until tomorrow morning when you'll hear from her mouth, her name, and then you'll be able to speak to her directly on this podcast tomorrow. And then I'm just telling you straight up, she'll be talking about the tools that she uses to print money legally. Now, of course, we're not talking about actually printing the legal tender of the United States, but the tools that she uses are the tools that she uses to, you can drop her off in Germany or Timbuktu or Tokyo or Buenos Aires. She doesn't even have to know the language. But she She knows the tools. And she has the tools. But you can drop her off in any country on the planet, and she doesn't even have to know the language. And, you know, you can do the same thing she does. All right, so tomorrow will be Tools That Print. Now, we got a different title for tomorrow's show, but in any event, don't miss tomorrow. I'm officially placing her in my personal It's My House DIY Housing TV Mount Rushmore before she even gives her first official interview on this platform. She's in the Mount Rushmore. The top four out of over 2,400 podcasts that we've done in the last 10 years.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the clients. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness, because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is, these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barber shops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right, you know what? I had to adjust after listening to that Rural Energy Foundation. I had to adjust my Mount Rushmore. I have a tie for number 4. And let me name, out of over 2,400 podcasts in the last 10 years here, the Mount Rushmore that I have, I'm putting a tie in number 4. based on the young lady that we will have in here tomorrow. Candy Leitner, she gave us an interview, about a 90-minute interview, and we have all these archived. Only thing that's not archived is the one that we will have archived after tomorrow. Candy Leitner, the woman who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving, she's in there in our Mount Rushmore. Next would be Patrick Collins, son of Marva Collins. It's a phenomenal interview. We've done at least six or seven interviews with him, and the impact that his mother and him have had on education. Who was the, Marva Collins, Candy Leitner, the three young ladies from Freedom, Georgia, that was here in January of this year. They're starting their own town. And tied for number four. It's two people. One hasn't officially given us an interview yet. That'll be tomorrow. And I'm not going to mention their name, so don't even ask me after the podcast. I'm not telling. You'll find out tomorrow. But tied with tomorrow's guest is... Sorry, I thought I got booted off. Anyway, tied for tomorrow, the Mount Rushmore would be Julius Magala. Julius is featured in the last audio I just played on the Rural Energy Foundation, which is today known as Solar Now, out of Uganda in East Africa. Julius gave me an interview. Right here, we got it archived. The first year we did, about 10 years ago. About 9 years ago at the earliest, but about 10 years ago, he gave us an interview. It's archived. And I met Julius in Washington, D.C. about 4.5 years ago. I met him in person in D.C. And... some of the things that you hear on the Rural Energy Foundation audio, I have not seen in the United States yet, like solar barbershops and some other innovations. So we're talking about there's some things going on, and, you know, if you want to find out where the future is headed, particularly if you live in the big city, go to the rural areas. Walmart started in, a rural area. You know, many Walmarts are still in rural areas. But solar energy, like I say, solar barbershops and some of the other innovations that are mentioned on within the Rural Energy Foundation audio, I haven't seen it yet stateside here in the United States yet. But it's coming. It's coming. So go to the rural areas, rural parts of, there's a whole lot of places you can go. I would say Julius, him and tomorrow's guest are tied for number four. If I had to kick somebody out and just make it an even four. I'm wrapping them in Julius along with the guests for tomorrow. Candy Leitner, Patrick Collins, the people from Freedom, Georgia, and tomorrow's guests along with Julius Magala on solar energy. That's my Mount Rushmore. Out of over 2,400 podcasts that I've had a hand in. And that's just on, you know what, I would even name them as my top, my Mount Rushmore, because, you know, I've done podcasts with other people, too. That's my Mount Rushmore. But like I said, tomorrow, we got a special guest in. She's part of that Mount Rushmore. Do not miss that interview. On that note, don't ask me now. I'm not telling. You'll hear from her directly tomorrow morning, and it'll be sort of like a part two of Tools That Print Money. Tools That Print Money.